Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. I'm Irene Watson. I'm the managing editor of Reader Views, and I'm in Austin, Texas.
And I'm Victor Volkman from Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Our show is recorded live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tonight's topic is Success Through Backwards Planning, and our special guest who will be joining us this hour is Jesse Farrell of Jess Talk Speaking Services. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Our podcasts are now available on a new internet station called authorsview.com. Please check our website for updates. Now, tonight we're on the line with Jesse Farrell, who is one of the country's preeminent experts in personal and professional development. He will talk to us about his innovative project planning method called Success Through Backwards Planning, which can be applied to authors and publishers, and learn how to avoid that sinking feeling of being overwhelmed. Boy, that sounds good to me. A sought-after presenter and trainer, Mr. Farrell specializes in working with executives, professionals, and companies and facilitating dynamic growth on a personal, professional, and corporate level. Mr. Farrell is president and CEO of Jess Talk Speaking Services, an internationally renowned company whose client base is comprised primarily of the Fortune 500 companies. He's authored numerous articles on customer service, marketing, and personal and professional development. How You Leave Them Feeling is Mr. Farrell's first book release. Learn more about this exciting new book at www.howyouleavethemfeeling.com. And now we're going to go to this week's special guest, Jesse Farrell. Good evening to you, Jesse.
Well, thank you very much, Victor and Irene. Good evening to both of you as well. Happy to be on the show. I really appreciate this, and I think that as we get into our program and dialogue, the time is going to fly by, so I hope the listeners are ready.
Well, I'm sure that they are. First thing I have to ask you, Jesse, what exactly is backwards planning?
Backwards planning is very simple. It is most people, when they go to plan anything, they plan pretty much how we've all been taught. You think about what you want, you think about the steps, and typically people start with, what step do people normally start with? One, then step two, then step three, correct?
Well, of course.
Well, what if you had because that's what we're taught. What if you first struck the vision of what it is that you're looking to produce, create, or pull together? You know what that vision is, and what if you started from the vision working backwards with your plan? See, that would be knowing exactly what you want it to look like, smell like, feel like, taste like, sound like, and then build your plan from that vision backwards from whatever step is out there. Let's say it's 50 steps, starting with step 50, then 49 and 48 and so forth, and then backing up to the number one step, and then start to live the plan forward.
You're talking about looking at the end result, the vision of the end result, which it makes sense to me. But however, now, how do you know how many steps there are? You're talking about 1 to 50 or whatever. How many?
Okay.
How do I do this?
A good question. That's a good question. You don't have to know how many steps there are because you can count the steps once you get from the vision down to the very first starting point. Let's take, for instance, the book, How You Leave Them Feeling. The book was a vision. It came to me in terms of the whole concept came to me quite naturally, and all that it would be about and what it would represent and so forth was more of an epiphany. So I knew what I wanted the book to look like. I knew what the colors were. I knew what the message was. I knew how I wanted the reader to feel. I knew where I wanted to take them. But I hadn't written the book, right? So with that said, if I hadn't written the book, I needed to now make this thing happen. So instead of just sitting down and starting to write, I took the vision that I had, and I worked it from the red and the black to the how you leave the feeling to the different laws of accumulation, of laws of personal professional development, and all the key words and key things. I built all that stuff first and built a roadmap for how I'm going to actually make this thing happen from the vision all the way back to now it's time to now start writing the book. So now I come with a blank sheet of paper, and I've got the plan in front of me that was derived at a backwards process. And the real key thing, really, Irene, that the listeners might want to key in on is if you make a plan going from A to Z, you might miss steps. But when you plan something from Z to A, you don't miss steps because it's awkward. You have to think about things that you ordinarily just take for granted. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course that makes sense. So let's talk about the book then. So your end result, your end vision, the vision that you had, was it the actual physical book itself, or did you take it further to the sales, the you know, what you were going to do with it, the type of marketing, or in this case, when you are doing the backwards planning, is it the actual book that you have the vision of?
Both. Actually, the vision came, I was on a life coaching session with a CEO, and the CEO was having some trouble with the senior vice president that wasn't getting the work done that he wanted to get done that he'd been assigned. He couldn't figure out why it wasn't happening. And I knew why it wasn't happening. It wasn't that the senior VP didn't want to do the work. It was that the CEO didn't speak to him in a fashion that incented him to do it. It was very awkward, very crass, if you will. And I wanted to help my CEO that I was coaching understand that, but the message kept going over his head. So I let him finish his entire statement. And once he finished, I said, you know, Mr. CEO, if you really want to incent people to do what you need for them to do, it's about how you leave them feeling. And then I hung up the phone after the session. I went, wow, where did that come from? Then I thought, what would that really mean, the whole how you leave them feeling concept? And I wrote 103 notes inside of 3 minutes of what the how you leave them feeling concept would represent. And that right there is where the vision came. Then I thought it had to be a book out there. Like if there was no book, I was researching on the Internet. I said, well, I've got to write this book. Then I thought about that's when I knew I had to write the book. That's when I started the planning and the whole marketing prospect of how it would be marketed, how it would be distributed, how it would get published. That whole thing was part of the whole backwards planning process from the vision to the book all the way backwards to then now I have to start writing. Does that make it more clear?
Yes, it sure does. Okay, so let's start then. We'll do the vision of a book. So we've got a lot of people that listen to this broadcast that are first-time authors. In most cases, they've already written something because this is how we're taught. You write the book, and then we try to find an agent and publisher, et cetera, et cetera. But what you're saying is, whoa, don't write the book. You start at the vision of the book. So let's then consider that that's where we're going to start. It's the vision of the physical book. Then what do we do going backwards? What's the next step?
Okay, once you've got the vision and you feel that it's something that can reach out and touch people in some fashion, depending on what type of book you're trying to write, still need to be able to reach people, then you need to build a framework for how you're going to get this done. How many hours a day or how much time do you think you're going to put into this on a daily basis, on a weekly and a monthly basis? Where are your resources going to come from? What are your key talking points in the book? What's going to make the book stand out? What's the glue to the book? What holds it all together? And all that stuff is laid out in a separate format area away from the writing. Then you write very creatively, obviously from whatever your inspiration is coming from, along with your resources attached to that. And use it sort of as a check and balance system to make sure that as your writing process stays free and creative, you got this separate structure that allows you to stay on point and stay focused.
Okay, that makes sense. And so I'm just, I'm taking some notes here as I'm listening to you, and it's like you had earlier said a roadmap, which I can envision this roadmap, but always it's a good idea to almost make a chart of this and use a chart type of a system also and go backwards. So
yes, Irene, you've got it, because what ends up happening, depending on how you're hardwired, some of us are very, very creative. First off, everyone's creative. Sometimes they just don't know it or don't know how to express it. And some folks are more structural and fundamental. But when it comes to writing a book, I think it takes all elements. So I like to separate the two processes and then bring them together from the creative tie-in. In other words, create all that structure at one point, which I did in an Excel spreadsheet, and then when I got ready to write the book, I actually wrote it in a Word document, and I just did my free flow, however I felt, whatever I wanted to say, and I continued to check back with my structure from time to time to make sure that there was a central story being told, a consistent theming, if you will. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It sure does. So, Jesse, how important is it to have this plan really, really structured?
I don't think it's hard-fired important that it's down to every single T, because the structure can change as the book is taking shape from the creative process. I think at the very least, it ought to have all the fundamental basics of what would tell a great, great story. And what is it that you want to leave them with? What do you want them to be touched by or learn or be felt? And make sure all those key elements are in there, and then the structure can actually shift as you're writing the story, because you may start out writing one story that you believe is the story you want to tell, and as your creative juices and process go into play, you may end up with an entirely different story. So that structure can shift. if that makes sense. Does that make sense, Irene?
Yes, it sure does. Mm-hmm.
So, Jesse, I'm wondering, does the outline of the book come out of this process, or how does this process differ from the classic outlining method?
I think it is part of the classic outline method. The outline actually is part of those the fundamental building steps from the backwards. After you've got the vision and you go to build the different components that's going to make this book come together, the outline is one of those things that also plugs into that before you start the writing process. So you know what you're going to write about, you know what your resources are, and you know what the key messages and or words that will help tell that story as best as you possibly can.
Right, that makes complete sense. So how would this apply to, say, the marketing phase? Could you just sort of run us through an example? Suppose I'm writing a cookbook about Southwestern cooking, and how would I attack the marketing plan from a backwards view?
Well, I think what you would do is you would, before you even wrote the book, who do you want to serve with this? If you're writing a cookbook, you know that there's so many different styles and types of cooking and or cookbooks. Who is your target market? What is your expertise? What is your passion? And is there a market for that? And so let's just assume that it's Southwestern style cooking. Well, guess where you should be aiming all of your target marketing processes at? Should be in that area.
Right.
So first off, that makes sense. Yeah, exactly. Right where Irene is.
Yes.
So what I would say to that then, Victor, is that what are you passionate about? What is it that you want to? Who is it that you want to serve with this cookbook? And where is the market? So first connect with your passion, and then look for the market that you believe it's best aimed at, so that you can do your assessments and studies in terms of how you can get that message to the people that would matter.
Yeah, that makes sense, because if you go at it, you know, like it's something that's not your passion, then the book is going to be just awful.
I'll tell you exactly. Victor, you have just made the $100,000 statement for your listeners. I'm not kidding you. You don't have to pay me for that. I mean, you could send a check if you like, but you don't have to. But the reason why I say that, because several years ago, I'm a professional speaker as well. I speak on the road and give keynote addresses and workshops and so forth. And so in this process, well, every professional speaker has to have a book, right? So I'm going to write my book. Well, I sat down, Victor and Irene, I was going to write this book. I wrote this book, and I'm diligent, and I'm polished, and I'm ready to go, and I'm educated. And I got about 31 pages, and then I had nothing more to say. I had nothing more to say. But the book was barely written, because I was writing a book because I was supposed to write a book. No, yeah. You have to become passionate about something, and your passion will tell the story. You won't. When I was writing How You Leave Them Feeling, I couldn't put everything in there that I wanted to put in there. I had to, at some point, close the book. So can you tell the difference, Victor?
Yes. Oh, yes. I got that.
So your point is right on the money. That's a $100,000 point.
Yeah.
Should I ask the listeners to send in to help support?
Absolutely. So let's talk about what are some common mistakes that happen with the forward planning, and how do you catch them with the backwards planning?
You said what are some of the common mistakes with common mistakes with forward planning is you think you got it, you think you know it, you think as you write the steps from say A to Z, you roll them out and they feel like they're all right on. And when you go to exercise any of those plans that are A to Z type plans, you'll find there are holes, there are gaps because you missed them. Think of it this way: if you ask anyone in the audience to stand up and walk backwards, what's the first thing they start to do? Let's say they had to walk 50 yards. By the sound of your voice, what do you think the first thing that view, those out there that are listening, will start to do in order to make that walk safely?
Turn their head around?
Yes. They start to turn their head around and look for obstacles, right? Right? They start looking for obstacles. But when you're walking forward, you don't see any obstacles because you can clearly see, right? It seems so natural. So your brain kicks in and you skip steps. When you're walking backwards, you don't skip any steps because you want to be sure that you don't fall over and hurt yourself. So it's the same thing with the backwards planning versus the forward planning. The backwards planning, you skip less steps in this. In fact, those of you that are listening right now, if you go to my website, jesstalk.com, that's jesstalk.com, there is an article on there called Backwards Planning, and it speaks in depth about this. It's a short read, but a good read. Does that answer the question satisfactorily?
Yeah, it does. So do you have a specific way of measuring the targets as you know after you've completed the plan to to chart out your progress?
Well, it's simple. I don't mean to be, you know, terribly simple, but sure, I check it off the list. I actually, in the formatting, it's, again, my, in this example, I'm giving, assuming an Excel spreadsheet with different sectors, sectors, say, 1 through 5, as I, my way of charting that, or understanding if I've accomplished it, as I go through the different, living the plan forward after backwards planning, I check those pieces off as I go. And one thing also you discover, Victor, with that is, oftentimes you'll find you don't need everything that you, so you just check off, you check off those sectors that are used in terms of the
right, there's always extra stuff that turns out to be superfluous.
If you plan well.
Yeah.
See, I didn't plan well the first time I started to write a book. I just started writing. And then after page 31, I had nothing else to say.
So, Jesse, I have a $1 million question.
I'm ready.
All right. I'm ready to hear it. So, as I mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of us as authors, we write the book first, and then we try to figure out what we're going to do with this manuscript that we want to have as the best seller, okay? So we've already written the book, and now you're saying you have to have, we're going to do backwards planning. You have to have a vision. But Jesse, I already have my manuscript. So, like, where is my backwards planning in there?
Of course. No, here's the thing. If you've already got a manuscript and you feel good about that manuscript and you're passionate about that manuscript, then you go the traditional route of searching for a publisher to get that book out there. If you can't find a publisher, publish it yourself. Pull together the monies and you don't have to do it all by yourself. Chapter 9 of my book, How You Live and Feel, it's about the village. I talk about your support group, which is the village that you have surrounded around you. If you believe in your project to that degree, your village will believe in that too, and get them to help you self-publish that book. If you've already got the manuscript and you believe in it, then you now need to go out and get that out into the market. So you're not, you really haven't done anything wrong if you've written a manuscript without any of these processes that I've spoken to, as long as you're passionate that you've written something that has a market. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course. Of course.
Don't wait to be published. Don't wait for some big publisher to come along and sweep you off your feet. If you believe in the book to that degree, publish it yourself.
And I'd like to remind our listeners that we're talking to Jesse Farrell, and tonight's topic is Success Through Backwards Planning. Coming soon, our podcast will be heard on a new internet radio station, AuthorsView.com. Please check our website for updates. Those of you who are in the Michigan area can meet me in person at the Ann Arbor Book Festival on May 19th, 2007.
So, Jesse, then, okay, so we've got the manuscript. We can go ahead and publish it. You're saying, go ahead. You've got passion. You've got it. Publish it. So basically, though, what I'm also guessing at is more than likely we don't have any type of a marketing plan. We just have this manuscript. So then where the backwards planning would probably really be effective is in the marketing end of it. We create a vision for the marketing. Is that right? And then do the backwards planning?
I think you're right on it and close. Let me say that you, from the, whatever the manuscript that you have in your hand that you feel very, very good about, what is the passion about that? What is the vision about that? Who would best be served by that? Then, yes, can go into a really precise marketing plan that talks about who should have this book in their hands, how are you going to get it in their hands, how often are you going to do it, what are the vehicles, what are the support system, how can you build a network or a village of supporters to help disseminate that book in the market rather than just traditional means. So, yes, I would say a real sassy marketing plan, and be creative and think outside of the box and find ways to get that book in the hands of people.
Being creative is really important. I'd like you to talk a little bit more about the village, the networking, and give us pointers on how we create this village.
It's very simple. The highly and feeling concept came out of that. I worked in marketing for some, actually 28 years in the hospitality industry and 16 years in marketing. And I always tried to lead people better than I found them. I always tried to treat, you remember that little saying that when we were kids we were taught, treat people how you want to be treated?
Yes.
Do you remember that, Victor?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Irene, you too?
Of course.
How about this? Let's twist it. Let's treat people how they want to be treated, and they will tell you. And that's what I did. I treated people how they want to be treated, and I created the how you leave them feeling concept because I always left them feeling very good. And what ends up happening like that, when you do that, is you end up with a lot of close relationships and friendships. So building relationships are the key to building your village. And when you build a relationship, when you shake someone's hand, you're one handshake away from an entirely different lifestyle. When you create those powerful relationships with people, they stay in your lives. Find ways to serve them other than the traditional way. If you're a casino marketing host, find ways to find them rooms and places where you typically don't have market. Find ways to get them to hospitals and doctors when they ask for help and so forth and so on. And that's how I was able to grow my village. So it's something more powerful than just simply networking. You're not just handing out a business card and swapping. You're doing what I call relationship marketing. Build a relationship with people and find a way to touch them often. Send not just an email, because anybody can do that. Send a handwritten letter for a change. Send a postcard. Do a drop-by. Do a pop-by. You know what I mean? Find out something beyond birthdays and holidays. Shoot between the gaps. Connect with them and touch them at untraditional times. You'll build those relationships. You start to build your village.
It's interesting that you say do not email, you know, not necessarily email, but send a card or a handwritten letter. I've received a handwritten letter from someone I've known for a long time ago and had not connected with this person for quite some time, and she sent me a handwritten letter. And that was just like, wow, a handwritten letter. I haven't received one for years.
Because you couldn't believe it, could you, Irene?
It was wonderful.
Remember the day? I'm sorry, go ahead, Irene.
No, I was going to say, it just, you know, something you just don't get because of emails. You do these one or two liners, and we're in such a hurry, and that's it.
Absolutely. So do something out of the norm. You remember the day when you used to go, man, I got an email, right? You were excited to get the email, right?
Yeah.
Now you get a letter, you go, she actually wrote a letter?
Uh-huh.
So do the things that stand you apart from others that leave people feeling good. Leave people feeling good. And not just on good things. What about when you're in a fight? What about when you're having an argument or a challenging situation? Take the high road. Take the high road. You can still argue with someone, get your point across, and take the high road. You don't have to get down in the gutter or the dirt with folks. So even in a tough situation, you can leave people feeling better. So I think that whole relationship marketing campaign is the front end, the middle, and the back end of building a very strong support system called the village.
And that's so important. Thank you for bringing that up. One thing I want to ask you, too, is we have a lot of publishers that listen to our broadcast, too. And I would like you to address how publishers can actually use backwards planning.
I'll do my best to answer that question. I'm not sure I'm the best qualified for that, but I'll do my very best. I would say if a publisher is listening to this and he's looking for backwards planning, I think that they might go out and try to get their hands on harvesting the best stories that are being told out there and the best talented people as they're either in the manuscript phase or first writer phase or even second or third books that they may have out there, is to somehow find pockets of people that knowingly have legitimate talent and building from that towards their aim, which is hopefully publishing good books, rather than just, you know, I'm sure they have tons and tons and tons of manuscripts that come their way. I would say they should go out to and also create the whole village concept, but a network of people that are in the industry that they know, where they can discover pockets of people that are out there that may be undiscovered because of their associations and relationships.
Yeah, Jesse, you hit the nail on the head there. I like to say, you know, any fool can put ink on a paper, but being a successful publisher is all about the relationships that you create.
Absolutely. Anybody ever heard of a good book called The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yes.
And in the Tipping Point, he talks about what makes businesses tips, what makes things tip. And there was an example they gave of, in his book, he gave about the hush puppy that was about ready to go defunct. And just before it, all of a sudden it made a surge and a turnaround, and then it went to multi-billions of dollars of a company that's in many, many malls in America. And they traced it all the way back to about a dozen kids in Soho, New York, that was wearing these funky, obscure shoes that you got from obscure boutiques. And when their cousins came out, they said, hey, where'd you get those funky shoes? And their cousin came out, and it caught on. Well, that group is responsible for having Hush Puppy tipped. Same thing that publishers can do. They can look for those obscure places where the talent is, and the talent influences the buying power. How about that?
Wow, that's I'm going to have to think about that. That's a very interesting statement.
But you're going to have to read the book again and then think about it.
Victor is a publisher.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Interesting concept that when you think about it, you can actually use the concept that Gladwell talks about in The Tipping Point and what makes things tip from a backwards planning process. Let's go find those sources and then work from those sources backwards.
Right. I think that sort of links into the whole viral marketing idea, where people are using unusual ways to draw attention to their product, even ways that are completely unrelated, like, you know, using a video to promote a book and so on.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, let's talk about that sinking, overwhelmed feeling. How do you start digging yourself out when you're, you know, 20% of the way in and you just feel like there's so much that you don't even know where to start?
Are we talking about, Victor, at the front end of the writing process?
Sure.
Okay. With that, I think your strength lies in your consistency. You make a plan that says to yourself that you've got to touch that project in some way every single day. And document the time that you touch it. Actually document and count it. Huh. And as you continue to document that time and count it along the way, you'll find and see that you'll gain momentum from seeing just how much you've done. When you don't do that, you have no idea where you're at, and then you get a little bit weary within the process and it seems very, very laborious, and you don't know whether to stop or keep going. But documenting the time along the way, you gain momentum, and the more time you document, you see the more you have in it, the more you want to go so that you can complete and finish it. I found it completely cathartic to do that.
Great. Yeah, that sounds perfect, like a perfect idea. I'm thinking, how can this backwards planning method work if you've got a group of people brainstorming? So far we've just sort of talked about, you know, the Lone Ranger and his plan.
You know what? Even there's more power. That's what you just talked about, the group. I call that the Mastermind Alliance, which has been around a long, long time. I think Norman Vincent Peale was one of the first people that talked about that in his book, The Power of Positive Thinking. He talked about the Mastermind Alliance and a group of people, especially the right qualified people, with those masterful brains all working together, you can work exponentially. So you pick a leader, and that leader can help direct that backwards planning process and piece off areas of whatever it is, the development that you're working on, to the key members along the way. And then from that, each person, you know, manages and handles a section and brings it back to the fold.
Yeah, I can see that would sort of get exponentially more powerful if you had a number of people who were all on board with this.
You would, but you would need one leader to synergize it for all of us.
Right.
Jesse, how can we measure the success of this backwards planning if we actually attempt to do it? How can we measure the success?
You'll be able to measure the success in two ways. One, from the practical checking off the list in a backwards process. And number two, your gut instincts that your project, whatever it is you're working on, has gained a great deal more legs and sense of accomplishment as you can feel and see your way through the project. I think that's why I think it's twofold. The best way to measure it is to actually truly measure it. And the checking off of objectives and benchmarks and so forth that are hit, that are built in the project, that lets you know that you're developing.
So what I'm hearing you say, this is so important to have a list. And as you go backwards on your list, you can actually benchmark. And you can assess and look and see what's really going on and what is working and what isn't working.
Exactly.
So
that's exactly right.
So it's easy to look at things and see them working, but, you know, we get all overwhelmed and we get into some holes and so, whoops, it's not working. What are you suggesting we do?
If it's not working, you're saying?
Yes.
I think you go back to the master plan and you look to see if there's a detour that has happened that you didn't realize, or that the plan that you had isn't going to work and you need to tweak and adjust it, and not necessarily overhaul the whole plan, but possibly reshape your area or direction in it. So by having a plan, you can go back and adjust it. Oftentimes when things go wrong without a plan, people just quit because they don't know what to adjust.
Exactly. So gosh, Jesse, we're coming to an end here, and one thing I want to do is ask you if you can just sort of put everything in one nutshell as to your final thoughts or what we should do as authors in this backwards planning concept.
I'm sorry, say the question again, Irene. Okay. I didn't fully understand it.
That's okay. I just want you to sort of summarize or give us sort of a lowdown on backwards planning and as authors what we should do, sort of as a closing concept, so what we can go home with.
The thing that I would say to take home with you is, and I think it depends on if you're a detailed oriented type of person or not, and it matters, and it works in either direction. I think the number one thing that you can go home with is know that if you will trust in this backwards planning process, even as we've spoken to it on this session today, just have faith in knowing that the best thing you could do is, at the very least, is create a plan if you don't have one. If you do it in backward fashion, I can't emphasize enough how much better it is. But to just make a plan, follow the plan, and when it doesn't make sense or things don't work out or your gut tells you it needs to change, don't be afraid to change your plan. That's why you typically do it in a program where you can just back it out, delete it, and start all over. Or if you're writing it, write it in pencil so you can erase it. Don't be afraid to alter your plan to have it make and shape and fit your vision. The best part about having a plan, Irene and Victor, is that you can change it.
You know, I so agree. At one time, and there's this concept, you make plan A, and if that doesn't work, you go over to plan B. Well, my saying is, you know, if A doesn't work, create another A.
Exactly. Adjust the plan. Not. Don't scrap it, just adjust it.
Exactly. Yes. We don't have to do another
plan
B or anything like that. What I'm also hearing you say is trust the process.
Trust the process from Z to A, and then live it A to Z. When it doesn't make sense, tweak the plan.
Boy, that is some great advice. Jesse, you have several websites. Which one is actually the best one for people to come and check out more information from you?
I'm sorry about that, Irene. The fastest way is go to www.jesstalk.com, and that's www.jess. Is in terrific, ALK.com. And
right.
That way they can explore some of the videos online. They can see some of the books. They can take a look at videos. There's some articles that are wonderful articles, including the backwards planning article that they can have access to. The articles are complimentary. You just jump right in and check them out.
Oh, that sounds great. Thank you so much for taking the time and talking to us all the way from Las Vegas, Nevada. And you've given a lot of thought to creating this backwards planning concept, and we're really grateful that you're sharing it with us. And I've made a bunch of notes myself, and I am going to check it out and try it out and see how it works for me, and I'm sure that it will, because obviously you have created it and it's worked for you.
And I want you to email me with those results.
Okay.
And if it doesn't work, I'm going to work with you until it does.
Well, that's even more enticing. Thank you so much, Jesse, for being with us today.
Victor, Irene, and the audience out there listening, thank you so much for your time and attention. I hope that you have a powerful day out there, and I hope the backward plan is in your plan.
You've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. We record live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and we'll be back on the air Thursday, May 17th, 2007, when our topic will be Creating a Buzz Around Your Book. And our special guest who will be joining us is Michelle Dunn. You can learn more about our guests on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated and Loving Healing Press.
And for Reader Views, this is Irene Watson of Austin, Texas, signing off.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.